Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Getting my dad to say I love you.
To say what?
Say he loves it.
Outrageous.
Bloody nonsense.
Welcome back to Getting My Dad to Say I Love You, the podcast where I chat to people I know and I like who are very talented, and they talk about their parents and why they are the way they are. But most importantly, we're trying to get my dad, John Martin, to say I love you. How are you doing, John Martin, my dad?
I'm well. Nice to hear you.
It's nice to hear you too. We got Roisin Conaty this week, Dad.
But I couldn't remember her second name. I remember Roisin because it's a very unusual name.
It's an Irish name.
I know. Nice name. I like the name.
You like
but
the
I
name.
Didn't know her second or given or whatever it is name people call it. I used to call it a surname in the old days, but there's probably some sort of technical reason I can't call it.
I don't think cancel culture has cancelled the word surname as of yet.
You're never sure. It might be, you know, there might be some reason for it.
So you're from the camp of you can't say anything nowadays, including the word surname.
No doubt your program's editors will refer it to their legal department.
Yeah, I think you're really overestimating the budget I have for this podcast, but I appreciate
it. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
If I get cancelled because I've said the word surname, I'm taking full responsibility and I'm
okay,
not
well,
you.
That's good.
So with that in mind, shall I go and chat to Roisin? We'll find out if we could say surname maybe, and then we'll come back and see.
Well,
if
I don't know what Roisin might have a huge objection to saying surname.
Yeah, okay, I know it pretty well, and I doubt that's going to be an issue if it is. Roisin Conaty, welcome to this podcast, Getting My Dad to Say I Love You. What I always like to ask at the start of this is, have your parents said I love you to you before?
Me and my mum probably say I love you to each other like 3 times a day.
Oh.
My dad's dead, but he did used to say I love you.
Oh, that's nice.
Sorry, this feels a little bit rubbing your nose in it straight out,
it's fine.
Straight out the gate, but yeah,
You come from loving parents.
Yes, very loving, very tactile, very, we say I love you at the end of every call, every single call. And my mum really goes for it with her, I love you. Ugh. It's like, I love you with all my heart. It's all that sort of, you know.
Wow.
But she'll do it like 3 times a day. Like,
well, your mum's Irish, correct?
She's Irish and small.
She's Irish. Do you know what, though? This is interesting because I've spoken to Carl Donnelly, whose mum is also small and Irish. And my mum is from Irish descent. I thought that, but it just shows you that you can't just base everyone's personality on where they're from. Shock horror, guys. Xenophobia is not cool. But I thought it was like my mum's kind of a bit Irish Catholic kind of descent. And she's not very comfortable saying things like that, but I don't know if that might just be how she was probably brought up by her mum and dad as well.
Yeah, I think it's different houses, you know. I think it's probably in different, I think there is probably a bit of, so I know I've got certain friends who've got Irish Catholic mums, and they never say that or like I love you or anything like that. Like, only like the most serious of circumstances would the I love you bomb be brought out. They're like, is someone mm-hmm. dying? Like, you know, and I'm like, oh, no,
I know. It's if you say it out of the blue to someone who doesn't say it a lot, they're like, shit just went down. And you're like, no, I just had a bit of therapy and I wanted to say it. It's kind of.
I've got one of my best friends who is Irish descent, actually, but I don't think that's the link. But she's one of my oldest and best friends, but I can't. I'm going to make up a name for her, Kelly. Mm-hmm. And I relentlessly say, I love you, especially during lockdown and stuff like that. And she won't bite. And it's so funny. I'm like, and then and I had to say to her, I was like, say I love you. We're in the middle of a pandemic. And she was like, what's wrong with you? Of course I love you. But that was my closest to you and your dad. To
well, I like the fact that you went and called her out on it, because I was chatting to my friend Louis out here. He's like an older comedian guy, and he's talking to me about his mom and dad, and they've both passed away. And I was saying, oh yeah, it's weird. I really want him to say it. And then he goes, you should, I think he told me, just say it and let him do his thing. And then not, and then and Hannah overheard it, and then I zoomed him and I said it, and he went, ah, oh, very good. And then I went, just fucking say it. why can't you say it? But I've said this before in here, but like, people have different ways of showing their love. It doesn't have to be in saying I love you. But it's nice that your mum is so comfortable doing it. And then related to that, I'm intrigued to know, is she quite effusive in her praise of you when you achieve good things career-wise?
Not really. That's the sort of weird thing. Like, she's not, she doesn't care about that stuff to the point where I think there's a sort of probably a level of disinterest in me. Not in a, that sounds dramatic, in a kind of, well, she calls my show Game Face, she calls FaceTime. I have to let that go.
I think that's just a parent thing. They can't say words right.
But it's also like you're not listening to what I'm talking about. She doesn't really care about stuff. She cares about whether I'm eating vegetables, whether I'm, you know, how I'm getting home from a gig. She cares. She very much sort of, and then everything outside of that, she's sort of like, well, I'll leave that to you. You know, it's sort of like, you know, she doesn't really have much of a, she's definitely not a showbiz mum. Like, I asked her to come to the Apollo when I did the live at the Apollo. And she was like, oh, maybe. And then I was like, it's too recorded. Oh, no way. I'm not sitting there for that long. But like, it was an absolute, like, not a hope, you know, kind of. And I had to respect the honesty that she was like, oh God, no. You know, she really didn't want to go anyway. And then when I told her it was two records in one night, it was... So no, she's not sort of like a, my daughter's great. And if anyone says to her, like, oh, you must be so proud. My mum's like, I'm proud of both my daughters. That's what her standard answer is.
I think that's good. I think that's very healthy to not be enamored. I think me and Ed Gamble were talking about the parents that are really keen on their kids in showbiz. It's like, it's a bit... Like, you're like, that's not... I wonder if it's actually better, like now that you say that, that having parents who don't really pay too much attention, you kind of like do your own thing. You go, that's nice. And then I'll tell my mum or dad and they'll be like, all right. But they're not, if it's people where you really feel their pushiness, then you're going to, you know, how many knockbacks we get in our lives in this world. It's like, if your parents were also just like, fuck, I hope you get that thing, and then you don't get the thing, then you just be crushed.
And I know who do have parents like that, who were like, why aren't you doing this, or, you know, stuff. And I feel like that can be really difficult if you've got a parent who's also like that voice in your head, which is, you know, we're not doing enough, this isn't going well, whatever. So yeah, my mum is very not into that sort of part of stuff. Like, she doesn't want to come to gigs. Like, she'll watch the thing I'm in, but after everyone she knows has seen it. And then, like, she'll need someone at the bingo to tell her to watch Afterlife. She'll be like, I'll give it a watch. Mary said it was good. And I'm like, yeah, do then, you know, if you fancy it, mum. But it's not.
How does she feel about seeing you as a sex worker on a TV show?
She was all right about it. You know, she liked it. She didn't mind, as you know, because I didn't do anything rude in it. She's not, in Game Face, there's a bit where there's a sort of sex scene, very conservative sex scene comparatively, but I fast forwarded them because I just didn't want, you know, she's, because there's one where it's a joke, but I'm wearing a strap on as if I'm going to peg a guy. And my mum went, what's happening here? Like, the whole thing. She literally physically was like, what's happened? And then it just got really funny and I had to fast forward it because I just couldn't explain any of the concept even to her.
That makes me think of, and I was texting you about this before, is that what, I've got the ingredients to this story in my head, but you used to do some really funny stand-up about, was it to do with a porn recording that your mum found when you were little? Or if I completely, but there's something in that similar vein of like, you can't even broach that sexual vibed subject with your mum.
Thing is, we do, me and my sister are quite bad. We sort of do, because she gets sort of prudish. When I was about, I don't know, it must have been like 9 or 10, 11 maybe, a bit younger because I don't think I've quite knew the facts of life. I mean, there was a porno called Satisfactions that we'd found at my friend's house, and then we brought it over. I can't remember the routine even because this isn't funny, but there was a bit like there was, yeah, I can't remember the bit, but my mum came in the room and I was like, this is what you and daddy do. Like, this is like, I was just sort of,
wow.
But well, you know, we were just sitting there watching porn at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the VCR in our bedroom, like a hardcore porn.
Oh, it was a full,
a full VHS taken from someone's dad. Yeah. But now we're pretty, like, I'll say things to get a reaction out of her, you know, sort of just to be a bit, not too much because she doesn't like bad language and stuff like that. But like, you know, I remember once we met Jimmy Carr on a plane and I thought, oh God, if Jimmy's going to say all this like wild stuff to her, she's going to end up telling Jimmy Carr off. But he wasn't, his perfect gentleman. But I was literally like, my mum would be like, I don't like that language, you know, kind of.
So I love a parent that doesn't like Hannah's, and my parents don't care about swearing at all. I could say C-bombs left, right, center. They just really don't care. But I find it funny when I go to Hannah's house and I say, like, oh, that was shit. And then Hannah goes, Chris. And I'm 35. Why can't I say the word shit to another adult? But it's very weird how, because she was just in a show on the BBC, a pilot, and they were very, they're like, you were very good, but just too much swearing for it. I find that a very funny generation. It's so weird now that, like, that is it, because no one of our generation really cares about swearing, but it's just funny when that's it's such a big taboo from that generation.
Yeah. I guess my mum's fine with like an effort. One of the things my mum's got a real thing about is burping. So if you're in another room on another part of the house on your own and she hears... with no one near, and she hears a burp, she will shout up the stairs, say, excuse me, darling. And I say, there's no one here. And she says, you just have to always be in the habit of it.
I love that.
So even if you're on your own and you burp and she hears it, she thinks you should say, excuse me, just to keep the muscle memory in case you forget and you just start burping and farting in front of people.
I agree. I actually do agree with your mum in a weird way, because I don't know, there's a couple of people out here who will just, me and Hans were staring at people, and this guy was just doing burps, but like, not like, just not acknowledging. Yeah. Like that. Just
no.
Had a sip it. You know, it's like a sip of beer and they're like, that's bubbles. And they just burp. And you're just like, that's unacceptable behavior.
That is.
That's,
you've got to say, excuse me. You can't just blow your stomach air at us. And we're all just trying to have a nice night out and you're just shouting stomach air into the room. You can't. Yeah, you've got to.
You can't. Well, no. I'm on board with Mrs. Connolly there. With that. she said, you've actually given me a flashback to when I was a kid. I used to play PlayStation in my friend Ben Jarman's house. And his dad, who's really cool, but like, again, his rule was no swearing when we were like 10. And we'd just be like the other side of a house. And I could be like, fuck, like that. And he'd just go, oi! No matter how quiet, he could be the other side of the, oi! And I'm like, sorry, Clive, sorry. I conceded a goal. But that's, okay, so your mum's not into the swearing, but she doesn't actively like care too much about what you do. But if you get like good, let's say, you know, when you got your sitcom, that's a huge moment. Did you call your mum?
She's totally, she's really supportive, but she right sizes things really in a really healthy way, I think. She's a very sort of, she's quite, I would say spiritual in an annoying, like meditative. She has that sort of inbuilt, her advice, and she doesn't read sort of Zen books, but that's sort of intrinsically her way. She's got a very, that's great. And if it doesn't happen, you're going to be fine. It's sort of that, you know, like, you know, you take life on life's terms. She's very like, this is wonderful. It's an absolute great day. You've got your sitcom. I'm delighted for you. But, you know, if you don't have a sitcom, that's also great. And let's just get on with the day. She's sort of like that, you know, like onwards.
She's so balanced. She's so
very
balanced.
She's a very balanced lady. I mean, you know, listen, she eats the same things every day. So that's kind of we're very different. She has a very good sort of,
sorry, like, you have to go. She eats exactly the same.
Not
meal
exactly
every day.
The same thing, but she likes a very like, she'll have like cod and mashed potatoes and broccoli at dinner. Like she has a very Puritan bar scones, where if she gets on those, she'll do four on the row. But other than that, she's a very sort of.
That's her soft spot.
Yeah, like she'll like, so for Lent, she'll give up scones and then lose like 2 stone. We didn't realize that all her body weight is scone.
Also, I can't think of. I feel like a scar. I don't even know where you. Does he make him a? I can't even think of a place. It's not like a Jaffa Cakes. It's like
Marks and Spencer's the baker. She knows the baker in Marks and Spencer's. She knows exactly what time.
she knows the baker at Marks and Spencer's is in Camden. One of the most mum sentences.
And then she sent me in there, and then I said, "There's no scones." And she said, "Tell." I can't remember his name, so forgive me, baker in Camden. I think it might have been Marco. She went, "Tell Marco they're for Margaret." And then I was like, okay. And she was like, and then he'll tell you when the next batch are ready. And I said, sorry, this is going to sound wild. And he was like, Margaret? Oh, of course, yes. And it was like 8 minutes or whatever.
It also feels weird having such a personal relationship in such a big brand shop. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like if you go into the local bakers, it's like.
But I think that's a generational thing. I think we see them as that. And I think because our parents, that sort of just became a transfer. My mum still does, you know, she. Like, even if they don't want it, like, my mum's like, oh, they're like, just take your shopping. And she's just like, oh, blah, 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 you know.
She's like, you've got a name tag on for a reason, and I'm going to use it 12 times in this sentence. Isn't that right, Marco?
That's it.
I love that. That's so sweet. So then your mum's very balanced when it comes to your achievements or not achievements, etc. Mm. So what I think's quite interesting on this is chatting to comedians and... I think this is just comedians. I was going to a couple of actors. I do think whatever your comedy, style of comedy, whatever you're doing, writing, performing, anything, I do think the common denominator is that everyone has a very good work ethic in their own way, in different ways, right? And I think you and me work in very different ways, but I know that you still work. you're a last minute person, but you're still a hardworking person. That's fair, right?
Yeah, I would say... My whole career is based on like spurts, very significant spurts, which sounds gross. And I'm really apologize.
Don't let your mum hear that bit. No. You have to fast forward that bit. Yeah, no, I know what you mean though.
Could do a day. I think you get up in the morning and like do like a big work day for you. Like if you've got a deadline.
I am a get it. Here's my one. And I've brought this on from school days when it came to revision is I found, and I might be wrong with it, but I think everyone actually works in spurts, but this is where you put your spurts. This is gross.
So oh, God. Gross. What can we so call gross. It? What can we do? What can we use instead of spurts? Splodge? No.
Burst? A burst? Burst?
Yeah, bursts.
Burst more sound like, that's still like a spot it's, just got exploded.
Yeah.
Sprints maybe.
Sprints, sure.
Sprints. So much more athletic. But my thing I've brought is from school days. I remember that I get up early and I will work for like 3 hours till lunchtime, and then I'll have the afternoon off, because I found that a lot of people, and this is school, and I think this is the same with writing. I think, especially when you're creative, I genuinely don't think you can work for 8 hours a day. You can't. You can only work really effectively for like 2-3 hours. But I'd like to do it early, so then I have the afternoon as a reward to relax. Ooh, but I imagine you go, oh, fucking, oh, this is a bit stressful. I don't want to do this. And then it gets to like 11 p.m. You're like, I've got to get this done by tomorrow. Is that right?
Yes. I do bits. I've started doing this thing, the Pomodoro effect. So it's similar to that. It's just that, and that's changed my life a bit. I used to think, oh, writing was this, I need this creative, you know, need to get all this stuff, you know, where's my inspiration? And basically I just need a clock ticking for 25 minutes and then I can get 25 minutes and a break, 25 minutes. And that's been really good for me. It somehow seems to bypass my anxiety and the bit of judging what I'm doing. It sort of just lets me carry on. It's because I think, well, I've only got 10 more minutes and I can hold. But if even in a bit that I think's rubbish or hot dog shit on the page that you just want to close the laptop, it says no, you just got 10 more minutes with this hot dog shit, excuse my language, mum, but you know, that sort of, and then I can get through it. And then at the end you do have something. So I've got a lot better, because I worried that the deadline and the sort of anxiety of that became part of, without sounding pretentious, my process, like, you know, like I needed it to be all stressful to finish my work, you know what I mean? To get to the point. And I was like, oh, I can't have this where my brain's like, no, we're good. You know what we need? A real threatening deadline that makes you feel like you want to have a breakdown. Then we'll give you some ideas. Sort of.
We need a big bag of anxiety that's just like weighing you down, that's scaring the shit out. No, yeah, I agree. So you've moved to this thing and it's made you less anxious about it, but weirdly with the timer. Interesting.
Because I think it's just, it's just, I can't, it's, you know, it's exactly what you said, which I didn't know, is the sprawling of the day, of a whole day of writing and what that should look like. And for me, I always, you know, in my head, I think everyone else is secretly wearing white linens in front of a Murder, She Wrote, and I'm just sat there like barely able to, you know, sort of like covered in mustard. I'm always covered in mustard. I feel like just like writing nothing. And it's like 2 o'clock and then I'm deleting, written the word cabbage 9 times and I don't remember why it was funny 3 hours ago. So I just, you know, so I think having a bit where I go, let's just do this and get it. It's just like jumping in, isn't it? And that's what that Pomodoro is, just like jumping into the pool rather than going around it and getting prepared to swim.
I might be putting words in your mouth here, but I'm wondering if you are in a, are you, do you feel like even in a messy way, you're like a perfectionist and that's what's, because I wonder if you're going, it needs to be perfect. And yeah, actually when you said that hot dog shit thing, that, which is a great phrase, and I'm going to use, but when me and Hans, we write scripts together, right? So I will normally write the first bit and then she'll come in and the difference is I will write this, I will just get it done and down. And I know it's bad because it's, and I know it's only going to get better, but there'll be a point where she'll be just like trying to do this, like 3 lines for like an hour. Cause it's just, it's not right yet. And I go, yes, yeah, it's not right. It's crap. It's shit. It's shit at the start. And then we work on it and we make it better. But I do think that comes from a perfectionism part of her, her psyche. So I wonder if you have, having the timer, you go, well, it can't be perfect. It just has to be, this is just when I stop, rather, because if you don't have that stopping thing, you're just going to keep wanting to make it this perfect thing.
Yeah, 100, I'm really bad. Like, I don't think I've ever done it. And take this not as a compliment, take this as not as a self-congratulatory thing, as someone who, I've never done a sort of really bad first draft. And so it's taken, not because it was a good first draft, just because I literally didn't finish it until it was, do you get what I mean? Like, I kept doing it like that. Yeah. So it took crazy long. Everyone's in a panic. No one knows what's happening the first time. You know, now I've got a bit better at going, get it down, you know, but I would be like, I can't cope with a bad first, because then just on the first stuff I did. And even now I have to go, have to push myself to be like, get the end, you know, especially just to get the story finished. Let's see if the story itself is a structure, the chassis works, you know, or if it, you know, then you can. And I have that thing of going, no, go over and do two pages and then keep doing those 2 pages. And then, and it's fine, you know, I try not to analyze it too much, but everyone I know who writes does that, gets a proper first draft out, just you know, that's a rough first draft, it's on the page, and then you edit and then you've got something to work with. But it is a feeling, I think, maybe I thought, I don't know, maybe that I, when I first started writing scripts, I thought I won't be able to make it right if it's not right, you know, like I doubted. And now I know how to edit, you know, I just felt like, oh, unless I, if I go wrong, I won't be able to change it, whereas, which we know, writing is rewriting, you know. But I think at the beginning I was like, yeah.
And who do you think from your parents gave you, I guess there's two things there. There is the work ethic that I said earlier, because I do think, like, you, just anyone that's, I mean, think about how many million people don't even ever write a script in their life but talk about it. So there is a level of work ethic and other stuff you do. And then that kind of perfectionism-y stuff, is that from your mom or from is it even maybe they didn't say anything to you, but do you kind of notice what she was doing when you were younger, and kind of, you think, kind of by osmosis gathered that sort of stuff?
I think a bit from both of them. I think there was a sort of, you know, my mum's a perfectionist. She's like, if you're going to do a job, do it right. That's her thing, you know. So she's, she
is that a phrase she used to say? Because I like, it's funny when parent, I love parent phrases. What was it? Ed Gamble said, his dad just kept saying to himself around the house, life is a job. And I just thought that it's just like, and my dad always says, you've got to keep the show on the road. Keep the show on the road.
My mum says that as well. My mum
does she say that?
Always says that. You've got to get the show on the road.
Amazing.
If I get, my mum also says, which is a great one, once you sell the sizzle, not the sausage. About,
interesting.
Like, you know, like, it's like how it's you, like the appearance.
Yeah, it's
you know,
a presentation.
About,
wow.
Yeah, and she said to me about confidence once, and she just came out. I was at about, she said, she actually did watch something I did early on, and she said, I think it's all very good, but you're very, you've got no confidence, you know, and this, you sell the sizzle, not the sausage. It's very good. And I was like, all right.
That she would do very well in Los Angeles with that attitude, because it is pure sizzle out here with very little
sausage. I know.
There's no sausage.
I think my mum had that, and my mum does have that, and I think she has passed that down in a kind of, unless, so yeah, that comes from my mum. Like, she doesn't like cheap clothes. We didn't have a lot of money when I was growing up, but my mum always was like, it's better to have two expensive good things than Topshop and Primark and that sort of stuff. And I was like, but we can't afford that, so I just need to get, you know, what I need to get. And she was like, no, you know, hold. Like she'd go to secondhand shops and stuff, but she's tiny, and that, you know, tiny people can do go to vintage shops and have a great day. Like, I have to try on hats all day, and that's not fun. but she's like, try on hats all day. Because I'm like, this is another Victoria, everyone's tiny. Everyone's like, look at all these bargains. I'm like, for you, mother, for
you. I never thought of that such a good, people were smaller back in the day. So vintage,
they're all tiny,
like,
tiny people. And they're like, so everyone's like, go, you know, and it's got a bit better. But she is like, we had our jobs, and as children, I used to do the bathroom on a Thursday. That was my cleaning day, even from a very young age. And then I remember her really like getting me to do, like, you know, obviously, like, I was like, sometimes like Cinderella. But she was like, no, if you do a job, you do it properly. And she was like, otherwise, don't do it. Don't start a job unless you're going to finish. And so sometimes you just need to do a quick wipe, tidy up, you know, like it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
All or nothing. You know, and I'm sort of like, nope, unless you're going to do it properly. And I think that is a good thing. And ultimately, but I think that can also, you can do it in layers. Like, you can do a first draft, or you can do a like quick tidy rather than like, well, there's no point me tidying up this room unless I'm going to clear everything out today. You know, and you go, well, no, you can still fold your clothes.
All or nothing. Yeah. It's like all or nothing with your mum. So you think from her, you've had a bit more of a balanced approach to this stuff rather than the going all into every task.
No, I think I'm like her. I think I don't do tasks unless I do them. And that isn't sometimes the way to do it. Do you know what I mean? I think some things are in bits. You do things, you know, like you can sort out one drawer in your bedroom and be like, that's that drawer done. Whereas I'm like, no point doing that. Unless I want to clear out the whole bedroom, I'm not starting. And everyone's like, that's mad. That's like,
that's funny.
Yeah. And that's her. That's my mum's attitude.
Yeah. Hans has the same thing. Her mum is a perfectionist, and she has learned that. What's the thing she always says about me? It's quite funny that I must have got from my dad. That was really, no one's going to see that, but you just turned the light on next to you. You look like you had an idea. I literally a light bulb just popped above your head in the Zoom screen. I was like, fucking hell.
That's what happens when I'm thinking.
When you're thinking and I'm bringing out those ideas, bing, light bulb goes up. What's my thing she pointed out about me, which is quite funny, that I think I got from my dad, because he hated his job. But he, you know, he kind of was like, do what you love and then do it. I don't think he ever said it. I just got the thing like, do something you love. And if I'm going to do that, I should really commit to it. So when it comes to like stand up or work, I'll put everything into it and try my best and be really thing. And I think relationship wise, she might say I'm an arsehole and a terrible husband, but I do think I actually try pretty hard.
Yes.
And then everything else, I am just the most half-assed, but like text messages full of typos, just stuff like that. And she's like, it's a typo. I go, yeah, well, I'm not being paid to write the text message. It doesn't matter if there's a typo in it. Or just, yeah, cleaning again. I'll be like, that's good enough. And she's like, why don't you carry that same attitude into everything? And I go, because that would just, because it takes too long. It takes too long to do everything that way.
Yeah, we have. And I think because you sort of have to compartmentalize that level of, because, you know, everything can't have it be a 10. And that, I find that really difficult. And I do get that. Like, I'm trying to, as I've got older, to be like, that's not a 10, it's a 4, and it's fine. So don't catastrophize and don't, that's a level 4 thing. Mm-hmm. And not like go in, like if it's work, it's always a 10, you know, but sort of just in your brain to ease your, that hot brain when you're busy, where you're like, I can't cope, it's going to be too mad. You're like, no, that's fine. That's a fun thing. It's not, you know, and sometimes it is like, especially WhatsApp groups, you know, when you're in like 20 WhatsApp groups or whatever, and like, you know, I'm glad to be, but sometimes it can be like, okay, there's a lot here. And then you have to just be like, the world's not going to end if I don't get back, you know, like if you're tired and you're with your family or you're stressed or whatever. And I think we've got a lot of, there's so many inboxes and things to check without being like, I'm so popular, but everyone is, you know what I mean? Everyone's got WhatsApp groups and da da da. And I think that too, and I think our parents didn't have that. And so sometimes I think their frustration with, they're like, I left you a note, you know, you're like, yeah, there's like a lot going on. I don't think they you know, sort of had as much communication with anyone that we have.
Do you feel worried that you're letting, and again, this is related to what you said, but I just kind of popped in my head. Do you feel, because this is something I know I feel, do you feel like when you get those messages, like you, if you don't, do you feel like you're letting people down if you don't, and that, do you like kind of worry about other people like so much that it affects you? Yeah.
And then I do this awful thing where I don't get back. I think I've got back. I don't get back. I'm going to get back. I'm going to make a decision on that. And I don't. And so not only have I created the thing, I've added to it. Do you know, like, it's like I've lost days thinking I need to do, oh, should I do that? But if I do, it's the perfectionist thing. If I respond to one, I have to finish them all. And I said this, there was a period during lockdown, I'd left my agent and there was a bit where my inbox was like, I feel like I should just put it in the bin. Like, it's undoable. I can't, it's unredeemable.
I've seen your phone and it freaks me out. You're one of those people, when I look at your phone, your red number by your emails will say, it'll be like 24,000. Is that right?
I took mail off of my phone because of it. Because I found it too, it felt like a threat. So I just took the mail thing off of my phone.
That's a good point. Rather than, not on there.
I've never gone through them. And it's just hotel, you know, you set hotels and it's like a Wi-Fi code. So it sounds all like, oh my God, I've got so many emails. And then you go through and you go, yeah, because you once signed up for a thing at a co-op, you know, like it's, yeah, stuff like that. And I think...
Can I ask you related to this? This might not even relate to you, but Hans, she hates a phone call because she thinks when she has a phone call, she has to give her full self to the phone call and really like be an amazing phone call listener. So the point where she's like, are they calling? I don't want to speak. So she'll just shut down and not do the phone calls. Whereas I'm like, it's fun to chat to someone and kind of keep it casual. Again, I don't put my 100% into a phone call.
Phone call's easiest thing for me.
Interesting.
I'll do two texts in terms of a conversation. And if someone carries on trying to have a conversation, I phone them and go, what's happening? What's going on? Like, I can't, if they are like, oh, did you see that? Like, I'm like, what's going on? Like, why are they texting me this? I find it wild that someone would think I would want to have a text conversation. I literally, that to me is the worst, because I'll ignore it because I think, well, it's obviously not urgent because they're texting me nothing. So I'll do a 6-minute phone call and it's fine. And you've done the thing. You're able to check in and be like, rather than sort of feeling like sometimes I'm like, cool, or like, I've got nothing to add to this text, or I don't, or trying to work out sometimes if you're like, do they need to chat? You know, because sometimes with our friends, you know, I always feel like, oh, if you're sending a text, sometimes like, do you need a chat? Like, it's, or are you just bored? But this is a generational thing. Young people hate, I FaceTime. I'm the worst. I'll just FaceTime unannounced, bang, in your living room.
Oh, mate. I only think that's happening if you've done it by accident. If I see a FaceTime pop up, I'm like, she's accidentally hit FaceTime on her fingers.
Why would you not? This is what gets me the most. Like, it's the most advanced way to communicate. It takes all the nuance, all of the like, what does that mean? What's that mean? Da, 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 out of it. You get it all done in 4 or 5 minutes. You get the vibes, you get the, they're not up for it. Then whatever, you know, I brought up going to see that gig. I could tell they were, you know, you can see the thing, like it's all done. Mm-hmm. Or like, rather than maybe on Tuesday, we could do this thing. And then you're like, yeah, I'll see how it goes. And they go, so that's booked then. You're like, I said, I'll see how it goes. You know, like it's,
I do agree. Now you cut out all of the, that makes sense. If I think it feels like a lot to someone, you do it and you go, we'll just save us an hour of
Everyone hates me. But I think that is for my, but I think I have my mother's invasive, my mum will, once I was doing an interview, showbiz, I was doing an interview with a journalist and my mum phoned me and I said, sorry, I just turned the phone. And I'd already phoned her. I'd spoken to her that morning. She phoned me. I ignored the call in front of the journalist. And then she phoned again. I ignored it. And then she went again. So I thought, something must be wrong. And I answered the phone. And I said, hello. And she went, hello, stranger. I'd spoken to her that morning. I was like, you cannot phone 3 times on a day I've spoken to you and say, hello, stranger. That's like me with FaceTime. I'll just FaceTime. I'm like, oh, I'll FaceTime them. And people like, they really are frightened when they first answer.
They're like, what? All right. Yeah, that's, oh, well, that's good. That's you. That's Roshi. You're a very personable person. I think that's your calling card.
Invasive, personable, fine line.
Yeah, it's a fine line. It's okay to tread over that line.
Come here, son. Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So then going back to your parents, and your perfectionism and you said kind of comes from your mum, and then your creativity, was that like...
I think really creative. My dad was really like sort of poetic and very, very smart. Like he was like, went to a very good uni, and so he was intellectually very smart. My mum is unbelievably funny. My dad was very funny, very, very dry. My mum could have been a great comedy actress, she is... accidentally funny. She knows exactly how to pull a face, like sort of she honest to God can like is the only person if I'm like sort of down, she can blindside me, because I never really and I know everyone's parents like, but she can blindside me in such a way. I was so depressed once, I was not expecting to laugh, and I don't know if you've ever had this, when the gulf is so far from laughing, I was like, well, that's not even on the menu today. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what she said, but it got me to laughing out sort of with no sort of consent. I was like, what? How is this happening? I was laughing and I burst into tears because I was so weirded out that she'd made me laugh. Like, all my friends are like amazing comedians. I speak to them and stuff. And then it's like my mum just sort of out of nowhere just got me. I was like, how have you brought me? Yeah, she's a very, and my dad's dead. He's been dead like 20 years this year, but he was very, very, very funny, but he was a lot drier, a lot sort of, my mum is a bit gregarious. My mum will do a face coming around a door. You know, she's one of those. She'll go for the, for no reason. Or she used to do a thing when I was a teenager, whatever I was saying on the phone to my friends, I was in the middle of like a big gossip. She'd come in and just go, stop telling lies, Roisin, to drive me mad.
Your mum's kind of like you. So your mum and your relationship sounds quite sisterly to someone on the outside. Well, obviously there's boundaries, but that sort of banter is, that's a banter I don't have with my parents. But like,
did you go to boarding like school?
No, I didn't. I went to a private school, but not a boarding one.
Okay.
Why did you think that's like a kind of a weird, like you think boarding school parents have this kind of weird disconnect?
Maybe I don't think it's an absolute, but I think definitely if you know, like
if you want to bin your kids off for 3 months,
going through those changes through teens and you know as we and having those arguments and learning how to navigate conflict with your parents and working out the boundaries of, you know, who you are at 11 with your mum and dad is who you are at 16 with your mum and dad to who you are with 20. Like we're different people and our relationships keep changing, but I think if you didn't have that, then it always must be quite guarded, I think. But I also feel like, my mum was very, we were very, very, sisterly in some ways, definitely. Like she's not that, she wasn't, I'll tell you what my mum wasn't, no discipline, or like, which sounds very contradictory.
That's interesting. Just no swearing, but otherwise you could do what you want.
Like a sort of
no
wild,
swearing, no sex, that's it.
Yeah, like she was very clever. But there was a sort of like, yeah, there was a certain, there was not much discipline, I would say, comparatively. Like, we were very disciplined in terms of like, we had to be in and stuff. But like, I don't know, there's a sort of like timekeeping, that sort of thing. My mum is all over the place with that stuff, which sounds contradictory, but that's me as well, I would say. Yeah, she's always, you know, late. And so my dad was never late, ever. Interesting. You know.
Interesting. Did it, I wonder, well, yeah, you just won't know, but Hans is late and I'm not, I get so stressed when we're supposed to meet someone and we're like 10 minutes late. I'm like, I'm fucking guilty by association. Like, I would have been here on time and you're sullying my name by making me, but I'm the psycho because I'm like 5 minutes late to just meet someone. I don't care. But like she's turns up for it. You know, you'll turn up to important stuff on time.
I think I've turned up some important stuff late. I think I missed the wedding.
I was trying to help you out.
No, I've got time blindness. I've got a bit better, but like even in therapy, like once I felt like for about 6 months, we talked about why I was 10 minutes late to the meeting every week. And I was like, this just feels like I'm coming here to get told off for being late for coming here.
Yeah, that's funny.
But I think I do have like time blindness. Like I honestly feel like my minutes just sneak out the door in like little like.
Oh, there's
mice.
A diagnosis for everything nowadays.
Yeah, that's it.
Is that a real thing? Is that a real thing?
Oh time no, mine is a time. Well, mine is literally time. But I'll be like this. I've got this is what I do, and it's also like a denial. There's so much goes on it to think it's going to be fine when you have a history of it not being that you will. But your brain says this is all working absolutely fine. This feels fine. And that's you should be brilliant. Like that phrase in my head should be like, that means you're going to be late because you've always felt this. And then there'll be a mad rush. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I'm going to be 10 minutes late.
But if your mum never really like enforced, you know, that's how you can't unlearn that. That's change. You can't unlearn that. Especially your primitive years. You're going to be
that's
like,
it. But then exactly the blame my childhood.
Blame my parents for everything. Yeah, sorry I'm late. It's my mum's fault.
Exactly.
for 35 years. So the creative, they're both were creative. And so then when you just, because how long have you done, been in acting and
2003. Yeah, like nearly, what is it? Not 18 years.
So your dad had passed just before you did this as a career?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then what did you do? What did you do before that? Did you
oh my God. I did film at uni and then I worked in a fashion company where I sold zips. Well, I didn't sell zips, but that's like what we were doing. I was sort of just a bit lost. I was all over the place. I didn't. Really...
Sorry, you really glossed over that as a, I love people's old weird jobs and selling. Like a friend of mine used to screw bottle caps on bottles for 8 hours a day in a factory and they all explode. Like, he literally was just screwing them on like that for 8 hours a day. With his hands. This is like, I guess there is maybe that, I don't know why it was cheaper than the machine or something. But yeah, selling zips is up there.
Thing to do with your hands. Yeah. I know,
he said after 4 hours, you'd just be like, you know how, you know when you've been on your phone too long, you've got a bit of a weird claw. Like he just said, like you just do that, and then I think it was some bleach factory or something, and something
bleach!
Went wrong, and
it wasn't bleach, it was something
cleaning product that could explode. And he said there was a thing where the machine blew, and they all had to like run out of the building. But yeah, no, so that just made me think of your zip selling. Is your first job.
It was a little fashion company, and then. Like they sold high street. So it wasn't just zips, but I remember the zips coming in. So they worked for like necks and things like that. But I didn't know, I didn't have any, I was sort of a bit all over the place. And I was in Crouch End with my friend Danielle. And I've told this story a lot. But we're in a place called Pizza Bella that's not there anymore. And just the two of us, only one person ever said you should be a comedian. And that's all it took. So it wasn't like everyone was always saying it to me. Danielle was really drunk. I was like, you should do comedy. I was like, I totally should. And then we went and put my name down. Amazing. For Downstairs at the King's Head. Then like drunk me had done that. And then like 5 weeks later, I got a call from Peter Graham. And I think because it was very soon after my dad dying, the whole thing, it was all linked to that time. And I think you have a real, nothing matters in a good way as much as a bad way after anything like that happens, because you just have this perspective of like, oh, the things you're scared of happen anyway. And so it's a fucking gig. You know what I mean? Like, well, the worst that's happened, it's going to be a funny dinner party story, you know, like,
yeah,
there's no real loss, you know? And so, and, but I didn't think I'd like it as much. And then, yeah, but I think it was linked to very much my dad dying, that the sort of the period of time was, I had a fearlessness I don't think I ever would have got, if I'm being really honest. I don't know if that would have been there if that hadn't have happened.
Interesting. You said he was creative. Did he have a creative job, or did you feel like, for me anyway, my dad did a job he hated, and he said, yes, you know, like, and it wasn't creative. So I always like took that like, so like, even though it's very selfless what he did and he paid for our schools and stuff, I was like, I want to go and do a thing that I enjoy and try my yeah. best at.
No, it was fun. He worked like for like Aer Lingus or like when I was younger. But yeah, he didn't do exactly the same. He didn't do what he was capable of, I don't think, you know, and or where his joy would have been, you know. And mm-hmm. I think our parent, that generation, I think there is a real luxury in that. And sometimes it can also feel a bit like a curse, because you get to do the thing you love. And then if it causes you stress, people are like, but you said you were doing the thing you love. You're like, yeah, everything becomes work though, doesn't it? You know, and mm-hmm. so sometimes even the things you love and, but I do think that they just didn't, and not, I speak, you know, obviously not all parents, but I think a lot of, and I, you know, still maybe it's not, but I think there's a generation now where people are all like very aware of, you know, how you spend your life affects how you feel, you know, like it's, mm-hmm. you can't just compartmentalize, but also because I don't know, I feel like I just couldn't, I always felt like, this is really funny, she says, but I always felt like if I did a 9-to-5, genuinely bring it back to timekeeping, I thought, if I have to do a job that starts early in the morning, I'll never do well. And then the more successful you get at our job, you have to do mornings. And I was like, damn it. Yeah. And I genuinely said to Peter Graham once, well, as a joke, I said, I did not get into showbiz to do mornings, Peter Graham.
Yeah,
like I was like, evenings, my comedy stand-up was like perfect, suits my dysfunctional sort of relationship with time the absolute best, perfect. I can, you know, that's, evenings that's I'm as funny. Good as anyone after 3 o'clock.
You're like BBC Breakfast, any way we could do this very early morning, almost late night. We do it at 12:01 a.m.
Oh, I'd be brilliant.
Oh, yeah. On fire. That's when you get me at my best. But the fearlessness, I think, is an interesting thing you said there about the life that you've chosen, and I guess all of us a little bit, is you're right. There's and the parents' generation, again, we're generalizing a bit, but they've come from this generation of you earn your money and then you do the thing and then you get a house, etc. Whereas and that's still passed on to our generation, because there's still a small percentage of people like get to do this kind of hobby for a job. But I do think the biggest thing is, you're right, it's that is interesting, your dad passing, you felt that you had the fearlessness, because I know so many people who are way funnier than me and I'm like, you should do it, you should do this. But it's always fear, because it's, yeah, I mean, it's, you get rejected all the time, what if you're bad, what if it's wrong. But when you don't fear that much, that's a very powerful thing. On the flip side, you get some people who are so fearless but have absolutely zero talent or ability, but are so fearless it sort of doesn't matter. This is kind of an interesting characteristic. I've
100%, and I think it's a thing you've got to try and preserve, because as you get older, I think you just naturally get a bit more fear. We all get a bit gun shy in every area, because you think, well, this is a bit, you know, that youthful, like, who, you know, it's all funny and it's all going to be okay. And trying to keep that creatively and in your own life, so it's not rust, so you don't rust sort of, and not letting it all be outwardly dependent, like dependent on results, you know. Because when we first did this, you know, when we first got on stage, there wasn't, you know, it wasn't like you had a committee and you auditioned. That's the beauty of why we did it, you know. You just went on and sort of said, I'm going to do it. People were like, okay, I guess that's how it works, which is amazing. It's the only thing in entertainment where you're like, I'm going to just put this spot in. But when things matter, it's hard to not be scared of them. That's the joke. So the second I did it, I did the gig, I was so stunned at how much it mattered straight away. I felt like falling in love. I was like, oh no, I like it. Oh, this is a nightmare. Like, now I want it. And it's a thing that, you know, and I don't think everyone has that. I think some people have a career attitude to it, or this could be useful. But my personal experience was, it was like coming home, and with all of that dysfunction and all of that the good and the bad of that coming home, of needing validation, of getting like a world where it's binary, good or bad, you know, like the joke works or doesn't. Like it really does lend itself to a certain type, I think, where
it does.
You know, if you maybe didn't feel seen, and I did it as a child, I don't think I got that much attention in that sort of way. And I think then you go into those places and it's like, oh, they're clapping me. Wonderful.
I know.
At last.
Finally. Tell me something I haven't known for 25 years, people. Just waiting for you bitches to catch up. Get on board the old quality
train. Your dad comes and sees your shows, doesn't he, your dad?
He does, yeah. Obviously, I've been in a different country for a while, and then with COVID, I haven't seen him for over two years. But yeah, no, he's a very, this is what I mean. He's not, I actually think it'd be easier in a way for me sometimes if my dad, like, if I had a dad who didn't really give a shit at all, I could compartmentalize it a little bit more. But because he does care and he's very supportive and wants me to do well and will say stuff to other people about, oh, my son's doing this or whatever. But he can't, he's very bad at, expressing it to me. So, and I was thinking as well, like you're talking about the growing up in our teens, and like he was around, but he used to be at work all day, then socializing at night. And I realized I never actually saw him. I worked this out, and I'm the older brother of my sister. I realized I'm like more grown up than him in some ways, because I felt like he wasn't, and my mum was dealing with some other stuff. So I had to kind of just start doing stuff on my own, which is cool. And he's still a mate, but you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I wish you'd just been a bit more okay to just be like a openly like connected dad. And I'm just complaining about some shit. People have got it way worse than me, but I just find it interesting that like everyone expresses their love in different ways.
Yeah. And I think they're the most defining relationships of our lives, you know, like without a doubt, you know, every mm-hmm. relationship after that is a version of that or something you saw, you know. So I do think it's fascinating. I do think it's really useful to imagine them as children. I think that's a really good thing to do whenever you, and you know, the houses they grew up in and what attention they got and how they were shown love. Mm-hmm. Is a real, because then you think, oh God, this must be so full on. Because my mum come from a family of 12, and so she's a middle child. She's like number five. So I'm like, did anyone even see you? How much time can you give a child when you've got 12 children and all women?
Do you reckon that's why she's very, that must be why she wants to show you a lot of love all the time. Cause she's like, oh, I didn't get this and I want to give this to you, which is kind of,
I think it is. I really do think it's a sort of like you sometimes give what you want to receive, you know, and that's sort of, and that's how, and I think that's, and I think she did get it. Listen, I think she was loved, but I just sometimes think about attention. And I think that's what I think love and attention can be different things. Sometimes I think I was loved. I knew I was loved, but I didn't get that attention sometimes maybe. And maybe that's what you're saying. So there's an attention that's a bit different, and it's fine. And I wasn't like, but I just feel like sometimes that compulsion to go on stage or that, and not everyone. Yeah. I know it's a bit of a reach. I'm sure there's lots of people on stage who disagree with me and stuff. But for me, I do think I always had a sort of need for a bit of attention, you know. And I think that's probably from the home. That's my two Bob analysis of it. That there was a little bit less.
No, I
always
think
felt love, but maybe the actual attention, like time with me. As opposed to in the air, you know, that parent who's just sort of there, but they're not with you, you know?
I'm no psychologist, but it makes a lot of sense that we want to be the centre of attention.
Sorry, what the hell am I doing here?
Mate, what do you think I've been doing in Los Angeles for the last few years? You know, just got me make a few quid on the side. What I've noticed out here, if you just nod and go, yeah, and just ask questions, people think, fuck, this guy's so deep because he's vaguely listening to what I'm saying. But no, yeah, you're right. Yeah, and I never thought of that difference really between attention and love. And you're correct. Like, of course, if we go on stage wanting everyone to pay attention to us, there was a lack of that at some point in our childhood. I mean,
and I think if you go on stage looking for love and then you get attention, you know, I think that's a really interesting thing as well. Like, there are people who, you know, seek that out, and you go, you're going to get attention. It's very different to love. You know, like,
interesting.
You know, you've got to sort of make sure that, and it's hard. No one knows any, like, no one really has a 360 on themselves to know what parts of the parent of their parenting or their childhood affects them. Because, you know, you grew up in the same house and you can have my sister, listen, her timekeeping is chaos. But the rest of her, she is military, like, which sounds like a contradiction, but that's my whole family are like that. But she is, there is no chaos in her world.
Like everything structure.
She likes structure. She really needs same. It to be structured.
So then interesting then talk about your work, because I actually love writing scripts because there's a structure, there's a sort of page aim, there's certain thousands of years have made scripts flow a certain way, but obviously you put your own nuance into it. So I really enjoy that. And I do like stand-up as well, but I sometimes get pissed off with, not like, I never say it to the audience, but you go, these people, it just annoys me. Somebody's turn up some crap venue and it's all over the shop. And I'm like, it's like, I would have done this in a much better way. Whereas a script is like my safe zone of
you're
like,
in control. Yeah. Like you're totally in control.
I'm a massive control freak.
Yeah.
I'm a massive.
I like that about scripts. But the thing is with me with scripts, and this is, and it's a, listen, I think it's a good thing for me because it helps my brain. I will say, this is what the script's about. Absolutely have every belief the script's about. I will plan that out. I will do what I've been told to get the producers to not phone me. And then I will start writing. And then I have to let it go. And then I'll just have an idea and I'll go with that idea. Sometimes that works. But to other people, so like my producer, she'll be like, Charlotte Lewis is a producer, gave it. She's a wonderful producer. And then halfway through, she'll be like, what bit are you on then? The bit that I've told, you know, planned out this episode. I went, so she'll be like, what bit's this? And I'm like, oh, I've got rid of all that. She's like, what's happening? Like, and I'm like, I went for a bit, and she'll be, you know, very supportive, but also thinking, let's just stay with the plan. We liked the plan yesterday. And I'm very emotionally driven,
which is
good in some regards and can get great things out of me personally. But also sometimes it's just having that, I think the structure of going, and I'm getting better at that. Like structure is your friend. Just finish the idea. You didn't give it a chance and you went with the next idea, like something shiny came into your head. But yesterday that was the shiny thing. And there's always going to be another shiny idea. Just commit to finishing that idea and then you finish it and you go, oh, okay, yeah. Like, but yeah, script is, I love them and I hate them in equal measure, you know, because you can't test it out. And so you're 25 pages into something and thinking, am I absolutely insane? Whereas with stand up, you'd never get to do that much work. You just go and jump on stage and be like, okay, this bit has got no legs. You know, like I...
Do you write your own... you don't write with someone else. You write with yourself and then have a producer, because I write with Hans. So I kind of have a little... I always have that instant feedback of that shit, so that's good. So you've got that even more unknown... Okay.
Yeah, and I have very good support. Hard. You know, my sister, well, she's really good. Like I'll get people to look at it, you know, my sister and Charlotte Lewis at Objective when I did Game Face really had a, you know... a really good collaborative, you know, kind of would be able to say, I trusted her. And that's what it is. You know, if you trust someone to be like, and she never sort of rushed me or to be like, or just, even if I went off piece completely. But I like the structure. I like having, I think the scripts, and I totally get what you mean. You go to do a stand-up bit and you go, well, I wasn't anti this bit, you know, but there's a hen doing and there's music playing and, you know, it's hard to gauge. Whereas a script, you sort of go on this page and this, is it good? You know, it's just it's a little
bit I need
purer.
To embrace the chaos a bit more. And you need
but then
to,
when you go to make a script, it's the complete opposite of that stand up. You can fix it in that room live on any given night. You could be like, right, if someone comes in with a violin and a flipping saw, I'm going to still make this bit work. Whereas a script, you write it three times, you write it again, it gets written again on set. Lucky I'm in my own stuff, because that terrifies me, because people would say, oh, this isn't working, I'll make this shorter. And then it gets written again in the edit. So there's three, and then by the time at the end, if it looks anything like the first script, which mine do in fairness, but a lot of the time, you know, it must be devastating, I think, if you're a writer and then you don't get to be part of that process and then see at the end and be like, what's happening? Because you have to move scenes around, because, you know, you have to, sometimes that's the only way it's going to work because of filming, you know, whatever. Why am I talking about this?
No, it's just fine. It's good. You're going with the flow. I love it. This is Roisin. And you're going where your emotions are taking you. I love it. Do you think, like you're talking about your mum, it just popped into my head when we were saying it about how, you know, she maybe didn't give you the attention when you growing up, and then now like you have a lot of phone calls with her. Did that change after your dad passed, or is it kind of been constant, or since you became an adult? Or I'm just kind of curious to know if you kind of, if it made you guys, by virtue become a bit tighter?
I think me and my mum were always extraordinarily close. And like, it wasn't that so much attention she didn't give us. It's just, I guess there's just a certain, I'm always fascinated by the attention. Like, you know, my house, you know, my mum and dad was, you know, without getting into all their details, they were sort of getting back together and, you know, it was a little bit mad. And so that's what it was. You know, it wasn't them personally giving me attention. The
they're
situation
their own, they're their own stuff, which is, I think, as we forget, I always, sorry to Carl, but it makes me think when certain people have kids around here and their kid is the center of everything. And I actually think a sort of healthier thing, and again, I'm saying this having had no kid, is you live your own life and your kid should fit into it and the kid shouldn't be the center of attention. So that's not a bad thing. It's just like, that's just, it, they have, you have to, life's hard enough just with you and another person and jobs and all that. And then you've got kids as well. You can't focus everything on the kid.
Yeah. I think it was that. I think it was, you know, and there was a little bit, you know, probably a bit more than that, even without being, you know, but it was, so it was never like, you know, like it wasn't like they had better things to be getting on with. It was just the way it was. And so, and I think certain people need different attention and different, you know, it's just what we need. And, but no, we've always been extraordinary. But when you lose a parent, it does make you, so I sort of became quite possessive of my mum, you know? And so I have to be aware, like, especially during lockdown and stuff. And I think maybe a lot of people, you know, I felt like I was, you know, so much like, you know, where are you? Get in, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
And my mum's like a, you know, she's a very independent woman. And so we've always been, yeah, no, we've always been extraordinarily close. But I think when my dad died, you do, you know, of course, the other parent becomes, you know, you've experienced something. And so that parent is, and she's always been very precious. I've very, like, I'm extraordinarily grateful and blessed with the relationship with my mum. Like, there's, I don't think I could say anything to my mum. You know, I could tell her anything. Like, she, I do feel like she's so loving. You know, that's her sort of vibe is, and, you know, and I wish she'd had more of her own things that were nice, you know, like that's sort of what I, and sometimes I think maybe that's what I do, you know, to try and live a life that is, I don't know, like that they you know, that they'd go, I would have liked to go at that, you know, like to do fun things and not it all to be a little bit stressful or whatever.
That makes sense. No, I agree. Yeah, you want to, it's, yeah, it's good to do stuff for yourself, I think, in this world of which is weird because you feel like a lot of people just do stuff for themselves. But I think if someone is, I know those type of people in my life and you're like, you just, it's, and a lot, it's very common in mums. I think they put everything into help, making sure everyone else is out doing a good time. And you just think, oh, like, actually my dad has that as well. He wants, on a social level, everyone's having a good time. I was just like, what about, what's, look after yourself, mate. Like there's some, you're important as well. And I think, no, it's nice. It's, I think that's good. If you're chasing your dream makes it sound like
chasing your dreams, but it is,
keep working hard, mate, you'll get there.
That's the thing that they want, isn't it? That's what they put all that effort into, these shitty kids that are us, you know what I mean? And we're, you know, we are what we are. And I think, you know, I think you've got to love your parents for who they are, not who you want them to be or who you need them to be. Like, they're human beings, and that's sort of the relation, that's sort of how I've, especially as you get older, I just think any resentment, like, this isn't my story, but I know I've got friends who've got very, you know, and I just feel like if you can to work on that, I would suggest, you know, a place where that isn't. And yeah, I think it's fascinating because, you know, you do see yourself in your parents, and I think it's funny that we are made from other people, you know, and then we just have bits of other people that think, oh, that's them. Oh, that's this, you know, and in a family, we just all have these little bits.
Yeah. Especially as you get older, I agree. You go, oh, that's weird. And then, oh, I find that, I found going out with hands is like you before that I was like, oh, I'm doing stuff this way, and then you're like, oh, that's, oh, you're right, that is weird that I do that thing, and then you're like, oh, and then you go, I think I do that because of that person in my life. I'm not blaming them, but you do yeah, all our fears, insecurities and our actions are we're like a cocktail, we're like a weird cocktail of these humans that made us. And but you're right, don't hold resentment that life's too short for that. You just gotta just, you could accept them for who they were and just try and be the
if
best
you can. Obviously,
you can,
some people, we know, we're relatively very lucky, you know, and then some people have to, so I have to remember that everyone's got, some people got really horrendous relationships with their parents and stuff, you know. And I'm into generational trauma, I've been reading all that, like this stuff. I do think you could pass all that stuff down, you know, like, so like, that's why I'm fascinated with my you know, my dad's childhood and my mum, I'm always like trying to get as much information. I'm trying to like record that my mum, obviously, because my dad's that, you know, like, so I'm, that's why I think FaceTime, but like even with photo, like, you know, people take photos. I'm like, take a video. Like, we're going to want videos. I'm always the person
that's taking videos. I was Zoom videoing over lockdown because I thought I literally was like, you might die and I'm in another country. But I was like, and I realized that we don't, and again, I think if we were like, you and me were like a generation below, we'd probably be videoing shit all the time. But like, we didn't have a cat. I've just not really got that many videos of my family at all. And I suddenly had that thought and I was like, oh, then you want to just have this and show. It'd be kind of crazy to, like we had kids and go, have you got any videos of a granddad? And I was like, oh no, and like, oh, I probably weren't around in your time. I was like, no, it was literally always, there's no excuse apart from me being lazy.
I had one in my pocket the whole time. I had a video one in my pocket. But also just ask them about their childhood and they're like, and ask the more specific you get, you'll get three answers a day that you're like, what?
I know. I love a revelation. I love a revelation of just like, because again, you just see them as you were younger and a kid and you're like, oh God, you were... Yeah, I'm like fat. I'd love to just like go back in time and just watch my dad as a school kid, and it would just be so fun. It just an eccentric human, so it'd be very fascinating for me to watch.
When I went to New York, I met my auntie, my dad's sister, his family in America, and then I said about his childhood, and I said, oh, you know, what was this sort of? And then she went, well, like this sign. I was like, oh God, like, you know, like, and then she said, there was the goose. And I said, what happened? She said, well, basically I sort of set the, do you say goose or geese? Goose. Goose is a singular.
If it's one, it's a goose. Yeah.
For a second there, I just thought, are they different?
I know. Yeah.
So
yeah.
She set a goose on my dad. And basically every day for like a year in their farm, like my dad was like 4 or 5, the goose would attack him. And I thought, pretty bad. But it was such a silly, like it was a silly thing, but it was also like, that's all I had. Like I was
like, tell me something about him, the goose. Well, we like, didn't expect it to be so geese-based.
Taking the goose story, yeah. I was like, but funny. She was sort of like, you know, he was very frightened of that goose. And I was like, of course he was. But you know, that's sort of just the idea of that, that you can, the stories, I don't know, that pass down about your parents as well, that people, when you ask other people about a dead parent, the information you get is always wild, like wildly inappropriate. And I know my dad would be annoyed. He'd be like, really? That's the bit? You're going to tell her about that woman I went with when I was 70? Like,
I know. You know, I know. They don't want to hear that. Yeah, especially if that, my dad doesn't want... I want to know all about his like past love life and all that. And he just, he almost goes, don't bring it. Like he's going to bring it up and then my mum's going to divorce him in like retrospect because of it or something weird. But yeah.
That's so funny. I quite like that though as well, that, you know, that they do have that sort of like, well, I'm married now, or I'm, you know, like since it is sort of bad form to bring it all up, you know?
Yeah. My information that you need to know about started when I met your mother at 25. Everything else is irrelevant. Yeah.
That's it. I quite like that.
Roche, this has been so fun. It's been great.
Has it been all right? You'll have something. You can chop into that.
there's 3 minutes we could use. Before we wrap it up, there's two things I've been getting people to do. So if your mum listened to this, does she even understand what a podcast is? Does she? Because
she does, but I mean, she 100% would pretend she didn't, so she didn't have to listen to it because she won't listen she won't engage with things.
You've kind of been so just complimentary anyway, but is there anything like if your mum's listening, you'd just like to say to her, just like a nice, honest thing for your mum?
She loves a compliment, my mum. What would I say?
Something about how she's dressed, surely, even without seeing her, she'd love that.
She likes compliments on her jobs. So like she's done something. So what she's done recently, maybe the sitting room, it looks really great. Stuff like that. I would say she does a great job. You do a really, really, you're really good at the things you do.
Lovely. That's nice.
And
that's
with every bone in my body.
I love it. Mate, I love the love. I'm all about that. And then finally, then speaking of that, you've linked nicely to. I'm getting every guest to say, to encourage my dad to not be afraid to say "I love you" to me. So, and then I'll play him this, and then we'll get his little feedback. So, anything to sort of help John?
Yeah,
Martin?
I think he's obviously got a bit of hesitancy around the "I love you" bomb. So maybe try other languages first.
What do you mean, like in French?
French? Maybe a little, I love you in Greek? Spanish? Let him amazing. Find the phrase, maybe the sounds, I love you, are a bit like, oh, too much. So let him, and you know what it means, because sometimes that is the, you know.
I just like, can't wait for my dad to say I love you in Mandarin to me.
Or get your own phrase. You know, that sometimes in romantic relationships, you just like, buttons, and it, you know, buttons means I love you, and they go buttons, and you like buttons. And then, so you say that to me, you go, listen, you don't want to say I love you, but we're going to have a word or a phrase that equals that. And that might be RoboCop, and it might be, it might be chicken masala, but you both know that word stands for I love you. And he, you're giving him a lot of, I think once you give him a lot of options and then he finds himself saying chicken masala at the end of the call, he probably will start saying I love you.
I think he'll forget that we've established that as a thing and he'll be like, I would like a chicken masala.
You're offering stuff.
Yeah. Roche, that's absolutely excellent. I appreciate that. That's the only person to have offered chicken masala instead of I love you, but I like it. Mate, you've been awesome. Before you go, because your flatmate's cooking you dinner by the sound of it, which is enough. Speaking of chicken masala, everything, look at that, seamless. I'm such
lovely
a presenter.
Stuff. Such a treat to see you.
I know. Before I go, though, do you want to plug anything to people where they can... No, you don't want to plug anything?
Oh,
anything
my show's on in the States, isn't it? Game Face is on Hulu. And yep. Afterlife Loved is it. On Netflix.
Lovely seeing you from afar doing good things.
Oh, thank you, my love. Maybe try other languages. Or get your own phrase. Buttons. RoboCop.
Dad, that was Roisin's advice. I quite like that. Is there any other languages you can say I love you in?
I could say it in French.
How do you say in French?
J'aime.
I quite like that. I think j'aime is just I love, isn't it? Yeah, there's no U in there. You have to put a vu or a tu.
Tu. J'aime tout.
There we go. I've got it in French.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yes, you need the... And tu is the personal rather than vu, which is the...
I don't know if that counts.
God, I learnt that at school so long ago. God.
Well, there we go. Trip down memory lane for you. What about... I quite like the idea of a random word that we both know means I love. I think this is a good way of bringing it up. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm less keen on the chicken tikka masala, I think. That might be a bit hot and curry.
Sounds like it's got a bomb in it. I don't want to eat
Is it tikka masala? Sorry, tikka, I mean, what's it called? Tikka.
Well, what about different word? Any other, what one word would be like, oh, that's a nice word that we could share between each other that means love?
Gosh.
Think of a word, any word.
Je m'en?
Why have you gone French again? What about an English word?
I don't know, I thought French is more sort of, it's a more subtle language for these things.
Okay, bibliothèque? How about that? Bibliothèque.
Oh, God, that's a bit, God, that's all dusty old men in looking at old books. Sort of people I deal with.
What about a random English word? What random English word could we use as a word that means?
Churchyard.
Church. All right, tell people to come back next week and we'll see if we can get you to say the phrase in real life.
Come back next week, it's good.
Dad, I love you. See you next week.
Yes.
A podcast from producerpaul.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.